In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We hear a past show from December 2010 with guest Dr. Joe Slate, author of Psychic Vampires. This is one of the foundational interviews that led to other topics such as healthy human boundaries, the human shadow, and Watiko. I'm rereading currently the book titled Psychic Self-Defense and Well-Being by Melita Denning and Osborne Phillips, which is another recommended title. Chapters include Why Psychic Self-Defense, Force Fields and Power Sources, The Psyche's Weak Points, Meeting and Personal Aggression, Strengthening Defenses, and Retaliation and Growth. In The Psyche's Weak Points chapter, it reads, "Your aura can only shut what is outside. It can't free you from what is inside already, or has a foothold inside already. If you form an image in your own imagination, that image can be a focal point for corresponding forces and can introduce them right inside your psyche, bypassing your aura completely. This is true even when nobody is seeking to influence you." And it says influencing you occultly. But I would add the media, the corporate media. When someone is trying to do so, the effect is many times more powerful. So if you fear something, or if you desire something and wish you didn't, and this is in caps, all caps, avoid image making. Admit to yourself you're afraid. Admit to yourself you want whatever it is, but don't picture it. Don't picture it to yourself. Don't, above all, picture it in action. And it goes on to give examples of how to make unwanted images vanish. Another part of this chapter deals with elementals and drinking alcohol. It reads, "One kind of these parasites is that which plagues alcoholics. Usually the alcoholic's initial problem is one of the imagination, either the imagined appearance, smell, flavor, and even sound of the liquid itself, or the inviting golden glow of a slight intoxication, or images of some situation which prompts escape in drink. If the imagination could be stilled, the urge to excessive drinking would disappear." That is amazing. So it's not so much physical, is what they're explaining. But with elementals participating, this urge will not disappear. When the person is intoxicated, the imagination will more than ever run riot. Emotion will respond to the stimulus of images. Energy will correspondingly be released. Some of the energy will go to further adding realism to the images, and so on in a spiral. All the elementals desire is to ensure that they have more energy on which to feed, and astral forms in which to clothe themselves. Meantime, inevitably, the victim's physical health as well as general morale deteriorates under the combination of slow poisoning and steady depletion, so the aura is completely broken up, destroyed from within. When the elementals have sufficient control of the situation, their own distorted images are seen. It has been widely noticed that when people reach the, quote, horrors stage of alcoholism, delirium tremens, their so-called delusions no longer have the personalized quality of their earlier imaginings. It is no longer the tempting drink, the cruel spouse or robot society, nor any of the pictured bait or goad now. Quote, "Things which come terrifying through the walls or the floor may vary in appearance from ant-like to elephant-like, but all are grotesque, menacing, pain-dealing." These, quote, things have been seen by other people besides alcoholics. They are depraved elementals which exist in a region of the lower astral visited by a minority of hardy occultists, psychics, in the course of their exploration of the universe. A number of such unfortunate entities seduced and seducing erratic humanity can be seen clairvoyantly haunting bars and such places where they sense a hope of prey. And that's P-R-E-Y, prey. Thus, a bar which has a bad name for inebriated clients in the past may close down and the premises may be put to other purpose for a number of years. If a new bar is then opened on the site with a new generation of management and of customers, in some cases the old trouble, quote, unaccountably starts up again. However, it is not unaccountable to the occultist who knows the reason, nor to the psychic who sees the waiting elementals, aroused and hungry for human energy. That was an excerpt from the book Psychic Self-Defense and Well-Being. Let's go now to hear that interview from December 2010 with guest Dr. Joe Slate, author of Psychic Vampires. We go to our guest, Dr. Joe Slate, and among many of his books, we focus on Psychic Vampires, Protection from Energy Predators and Parasites. Dr. Slate is a licensed psychologist in private practice with a PhD from the University of Alabama and postdoctoral studies in hypnosis, psychosomatic medicine at the University of California. His research interests include health and fitness, rejuvenation, pain management, reincarnation, and the human aura. His research into human energy systems has been funded by the U.S. Army and the Parapsychology Foundation of New York. In the interview, Dr. Slate defines the term psychic vampire and its many applications from countries, corporations, to the individual. Nearly half of the information in the book is dedicated to protection techniques and emboldening the human energy system. Dr. Joe Slate, welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You are the author of Psychic Vampires, and that's a very interesting book. You have done some extraordinary study here in what's called psychic vampirism. Can you describe what that is?
All right. My interest in psychic vampires started several years ago when I received a contract from the U.S. Army to study the external energy system of the human body. And during that study, we began to notice, using electrophotography to measure and then digitize the external energy system surrounding the human body, we began to notice some very interesting trends. And from that, we developed some controlled laboratory studies, always using scientific objectivity to investigate those trends, and came out with this interesting phenomenon we have labeled psychic vampires, though that concept has been around for many years. That's the way it started. I thought, you know, at the time, well, we need to pursue this topic and maybe clarify some of the misconceptions that are out there that have more or less dramatized this whole idea of the transfer of energy from one person to another, and then to go beyond just the one-on-one type of vampirism to go into other forms. That's what the book attempts to do.
That's the interesting part of this book, because you begin labeling the various types of psychic vampirism, and I didn't know there were so many types.
You don't see very much written about the various types. In fact, that was one of my main objectives in doing the book, is to broaden the scope of this concept. And in doing so, we began to relate psychic vampirism not only to person-on-person kind of interactions, but we began to see it in other forms, to include group interactions, as well as in industrial management settings like that, in which we find organizations that, believe it or not, vampirize their employees in a variety of different ways. And so we expanded the whole scope of the topic to include a very broad form of psychic vampirism. And maybe even, I might add, on a global scale, we see vampirism and
the interactions among nations in which one nation almost attempts to subdue and vampirize another. One-on-one vampirism can be expanded to a massive global scale, and my book shows how that can happen.
I've heard of those types of comparisons before with boundaries of the human being, bizarre survivalist boundaries of people being compared to that of North Korea or something like that.
Exactly.
Can you give an example of that vampire interaction with countries?
Well, actually, there are all kinds of manifestations of that. Anytime you use deceit in, I think, relations among nations, anytime you introduce the motive of disempowering another culture, whether it's due to financial gain or maybe it is based on discrimination, all kinds of factors enter this situation. It has so many different faces. It is sort of difficult to bring it all down to a simple conclusion. But I think you could say that anytime you have a situation, whether it be an individual, a group, an organization, or even on a national scale, anytime you have a group that attempts to disempower another group, then you have a massive example of energy vampirism, which, you know, energy vampirism is the same as psychic vampirism. It is an energy form of interaction. It is common in the world today.
Your book was written in 2002, and you go through eight particular categories of one-on-one psychic vampire lifestyles. The first one is narcissistic vampire. It goes to schizoid vampire, the paranoid vampire, the antisocial vampire, the addictive vampire, the socialized vampire, the cyberspace vampire, and the ambivalent vampire.
Now, those are characteristics of the vampire alone, not the victim.
Right, the one-on-one. Those, right, I understand.
The point that I'm trying to make there is, even on a personal one-on-one level, psychic vampirism has many guises. And although we might be reluctant to admit it, when you look over those various forms of one-on-one vampirism, you begin to realize, I have some of those traits myself. And then we have to finally come down to the conclusion that psychic vampirism, or the tendency toward it, exists to some degree, possibly in everyone. A very broad example of that would be discrimination, or the tendency to enfeeble another group, or the tendency to take advantage of another person for selfish gain or selfish reasons. In its energy form, in its purest energy form, however, vampirism actually is a transfer of energy. We are our energy beings, and we are enveloped in energies. We sometimes call that energy system the human aura. I just think of it as an enveloping type of energy. We draw energy sometimes from other persons around us, and they sometimes draw energy from us. You may have experienced that in interacting with an individual or group where fatigue begins to set in, and you begin to realize that there's a certain energy exchange and maybe a loss of energy going on here. That happens. And so what I tried to do in writing this book was to find ways that we can counteract that. I was at the time teaching a course in social psychology when I was a graduate course in social psychology when I was writing this book. And among the concepts we get into is the idea of a social distance that surrounds us. If someone moves too close, we tend to do what? Back away. We generate distance if we feel threatened by an invasion of our social distance. It's sort of a private kind of social distance that we envelop ourselves in. And if someone begins to invade that distance or that space, we tend to back away from it. And I use that as one way of coping with the onslaught of psychic vampirism, just simply generate a distance between yourself and the psychic vampire. And, of course, there are many other ways we can do that.
You also mentioned the other types of psychic vampirism, but with this, you can distance yourself. However, there are cases where you could be miles away and it could be happening.
That's right. Distance becomes sort of irrelevant in many situations. But often, particularly on one-on-one vampirism, like vampirism between one person and another with whom you're interacting, there are techniques that we can use to extinguish in an instance the loss of energy. I can give you a very interesting example of that. I had a former student. She had just completed her degree in personnel psychology and was being interviewed by a personnel manager for a business position. Well, during the interview, she began to notice this fatigue, this slowing of her mental functions during the interview, and she thought, I'm certainly not at my best in this interview. And then she began to realize that she was the victim of a vampire attack. Although the interviewer had no idea, probably, that such an attack was underway. But then she began to realize, you know, I can correct this. I can reverse what is happening here. And she used a technique that she learned in my class called the finger interlock technique. It's sort of a dramatic technique, but it can be done in an instance, and it envelops your body in a protective shield. And so she used that, took command of the interview. The whole situation totally changed, and she was rewarded with an offer for the position. So there are things that we can do. And a part of that finger interlock technique, incidentally, is described in the book. It takes only seconds to implement, and our studies using electrophotography showed that it does erect a shield, a protective shield, around your own personal energy system. I considered that one of the most important findings of our research, and it's available. It's very simple. It's available to anyone who might feel that they're being victimized by energy vampirism.
What an amazing example. And she got the job. But that
yes,
also
she did. In fact, she was given an offer beyond that she even expected. I would be glad to run you through this little technique quite quickly, Jeff, if you would like. It's so simple and yet so effective. I found in the study of complex phenomena, complexity seeks simplicity. Now, I can't explain why that's the case, but we found very complex psychological and parapsychological phenomena. Always, when you boil it down, they're very simple concepts involved, and the empowering approach to deal with those things is usually quite simple. In the finger interlock technique, you simply join your thumb and middle finger, the tips of each hand, to make two circles. Then you bring the hands together to interlock those circles so you have the finger interlock. Then you simply mentally use the affirmation, I am protected and fully empowered. And that's all you have to do. Instantly, you assume command of situations, social interactions that otherwise could become more or less vampiristic in their nature.
And one of the hallmarks of that was fatigue, and her mental processes were breaking down a little
right.
bit. You point out in the book there's a spectrum of psychic vampirism, from maybe this is somewhere in the lower ranges, but in the higher ranges, how severe is it for the victim?
Well, the fact of the matter is, in these higher ranges, you have the energy vampire who develops a dependency on the energy system of another individual. The psychic vampire, typically, whether male or female, has a weak energy or undeveloped energy system. And so they have learned to rely on the energy system of other people around them to maintain their energy supply. Now, that's a sad dilemma to find oneself in. So while the psychic vampire may not be aware of that, it nevertheless becomes a powerful force in social interactions, and there's no winner. The victim becomes disempowered by the loss of energy. The vampire becomes disempowered by increased dependency on the energy of another person. And so there are ways of correcting that. And in my writing on this topic and our research studies that backed it up, we found there are ways that the vampire can empower oneself. And there are ways of the victim also using similar techniques to achieve a state of empowerment. So that's what the book is all about. It isn't to condemn the vampire. I mean, what's to be gained by saying, oh, the vampire is an evil person? Or to condemn the victim by being so vulnerable to the vampire? It's just a characteristic that exists in social interactions for almost everyone to some degree. If you think back, Jeff, you may recall a situation in which you just became increasingly fatigued as the interaction wore on. That could be a form of energy transfer, which we could label vampirism. It's certainly an energy type, has nothing to do with the blood type of fictional vampirism. It's just a characteristic that we all experience to some degree.
Exactly. As you point out, it's energy instead of blood. And we're talking with Dr. Joe Slate. He's a licensed psychologist, professor, and author of many books, including Psychic Vampires, and that's the book we're talking about today. You also help psychic vampires, people who actually begin to recognize that they are sort of addicted to taking energy from other people. I thought that's good to help both sides of this issue. And then you also go into detail about psychic vampires that are drawing energy from large crowds. And I thought that was really fascinating because you spoke of rock concerts and parties and things like that. Can you talk to us a little bit in detail about how that works?
Okay, that is among the most complicated forms of psychic vampirism, and it's very difficult to research. But what we did, we took measures of energy levels before participation in certain kinds of social events, and then we did measurements after the event. And in certain situations, we found a marked decrease in energy levels. But conversely, in certain situations, we found a marked increase in energy. We did that, of course, as pre-test and post-test measures of energy. And then the event intervened. And we could then draw some conclusion about the nature of the event as far as its vampire nature is concerned. But we found it very interesting that some events actually increased the energy level of our subjects. Now, did that mean they were drawing energy from the group? Possibly. Or it could have been just an inherent increase in the energy system due to maybe things like inspiration or increased motivation or the challenge. But for example, we found in the university setting, certain challenging academic courses that required thought and participation, the challenging nature of a course for these were doctoral students in a university setting, could actually increase their energy level. On the other hand, boring college-level courses, and we've all had them, probably. In fact, I may have taught a few of them. But you can guess what a boring you could be high in energy entering a very boring lecture situation, and you can guess what's going to happen if we do a post-measure of your energy level.
You'll fall asleep.
Yeah, and that might be one effective defense against it. But as we emerge from certain situations, they actually will show a marked decrease in the energy system of the participant. And so I said, it's a very difficult situation to actually research and then to conclude with validity that group vampire does indeed exist and you participate in some group settings. You will actually lose your energy instead of increasing it. And it all boiled down, I think, eventually to our case studies in which we found this phenomenon to be very prevalent. Also, I found, as you've said, I have worked with people who are involved in this phenomenon, and I found that in couples counseling, it is not unusual to find trends of psychic vampirism in couples' relationship. And to investigate that, we did psychological measures of couples undergoing therapy because of problems in the relationship. And we found that the authoritative partner showed a powerful energy system. The less assertive partner showed a very severe depletion of energy. And so in couples counseling, what it finally comes down to is an imbalance in energies between partners. And so we developed techniques, therapeutic techniques, that would correct that condition. Some of them get a little complicated. Once the partners have insight into what's going on, then they're able to more effectively cope with it. And I use role reversal to help deal with that. The male partner would take on the role of the female partner in counseling. In role reversal, the female would take on the role of the male, and she would behave in ways that the male typically behaved in. Or from her perspective, that was true. And we found a balancing effect just by simply exchanging roles.
I wondered how you would approach that. That's very fascinating. And that was the next topic I was going to ask you about. And you have categories in this area as well. The dependent relationship, the codependent relationship, the abusive relationship, the perfect relationship, the competitive relationship, the arranged relationship.
Right. Or just insert here, Jeff, that anytime you have something less than authenticity in a relationship, you're going to get an imbalance of energy. It all comes down to honesty, you know, and integrity in our relationships. Then we can cope with emerging problems. We can cope with imbalanced energies. We can solve problems, whether they are relational or financial or whatever they are, once we achieve that attuned state between partners. But in the imbalanced state in which a partner is being vampirized, and I hesitate to use that term, but it actually does happen, then we have to take action to bring about this balance. And that requires a deeper understanding of both the victim and the vampire. And I'm, again, hesitant to label them as such, but we see that happening quite often, particularly in couples therapy. Now, while some relationships just simply run their course, not all relationships are going to last forever. We know that. And some simply run their course, and ending of the relationship can be the best solution. There are many relationships, however, that are doomed almost from the start because of this imbalance in the energy nature of the relationship. And that's what in couples counseling, I think that's the emerging trend in couples counseling, to bring about a resolution of problems and conflicts and that sort of thing, while at the same time bring couples into a state of attunement at least, and balance in the relationship, so that you don't have one partner, whether it male or female, dominating the relationship and dominating and controlling the other partner. Such relationships are doomed for failure unless there's some kind of intervention that brings about balance and attunement.
That's very important information for couples indeed. Now, turning to the auric field research that you did with the military, the auric field, I suspect, holds a lot of information. A friend of mine said that she had experienced a dramatic psychic vampire attack where she felt her auric field had completely vanished and she was susceptible to any kind of energy in the ambient environment that would bombard her. What information did you find in the auric field that sort of protects people on that level?
Okay, that's a very important question. My work has focused on self-empowerment. That is, what can you do for yourself rather than depending on someone else? And the book on psychic vampires, the centerpiece of that book is self-empowerment. What you can do. Of course, there are others like professionals out there that can help us deal with that. But what can you do for yourself? And that's the reason I get into programs, step-by-step programs. And the book concludes, and I don't want to sound self-promoted here, but the book concludes with a self-empowerment plan. I think it's over a seven-day period that you can use to, whatever the nature of your energy system or your life, aside from that, you can bring it into focus and into balance and empower it to a level that you can effectively cope. You have the power. It's within you. And we can find ways of becoming more than we are. That's the great challenge we all face, isn't it? To learn and grow, and it's an ongoing forever process. That's what I attempt to do in the book. But, you know, the unfortunate thing here is that within that same train of thought, vampirism can emerge from within yourself. In writing this book, I was amazed to find that decades ago, parasitic vampirism was a psychodiagnostic category of disorders and was used at least sparingly by many therapists. Their assumption was that you can have internal conditions that can give rise to vampirism.
Physiological? Oh, phobias. Okay, got it.
A phobia would be an excellent example. It can deplete your energy system. It can constrict your life. It can, in fact, wreck your life. Another example is obsessive-compulsive disorder. You are obsessed by this need to repeat a self-defeating behavior over and over and over again, and the behavior depletes your energy system. It fatigues you and limits the opportunities around you. And so there are internal conditions. Those are only two of them, and I just discussed several, that emerge from within the self. And we call it parasitic because these conditions act as energy parasites, not to influence other people so much as to disempower ourselves. And so one of my major goals in writing this book, again, was to explore that type of vampirism that emerges from within yourself. And it becomes a challenge to find the source of those and extinguish them. And that's where I began using the concept of past lives. We found through age regression, a very simple process of taking one back to experience past, relevant past lives. And we have to admit, Jeff, knowledge is power. And once you get understanding of the origin of a problem, you're well on your way to a solution. And in some instances, insight alone is sufficient to bring about a complete resolution.
Dr. Slate, these are just fascinating studies, and it's incredible information to learn about and begin to start learning about for many listeners, possibly. The book is Psychic Vampires, written by Dr. Joe Slate. He is a licensed psychologist and professor. We're going to take calls at the bottom of the hour here, and you could talk to Dr. Joe Slate. Dr. Slate, are you ready to take calls?
Oh, absolutely.
You're listening to In Other News on WBAI, and we're here with Dr. Joe Slate. He's our guest and author of Psychic Vampires. Okay, hi, you're on the air on WBAI with Dr. Slate.
Yes, good evening, Jeff and Dr. Slate. Very, very, very interesting. As I was listening, I want to make a comment and then a comment around my questions to you. I envision this new Homeland Security that says that we must submit to ionizing radiation and a brown shirt, a Gropstopia, Gestapia. I think that's a perfect symbol in terms of this psychic vampirism. And I want to get your comment on that, but I also want to say, I want to bring up, if you're familiar with Edgar Cayce, who, as he tuned into his psychic powers, an elevator door opened up before him, and he could see the auras that you've been talking about.
Yeah.
He saw nobody with auras, and something made him not get in, and the cable broke on that elevator, and nobody had auras. But my concern is, the first part of it is do you work with organizations? And if so, how you go about it? Because I think too many in our community now, sort of like in the elevator where the cable is about to snap. It might be one of your most fruitful projects because, you know, as the youngums come on, those of us who are baby boomers see that we're about to lose a huge treasure of community radio. So I'll listen to your answer, but I think if you work on projects, I think WBAI Pacifica would be a good start, and there were those who would like to work with you around the vampirism going on at BAI. And I'll listen to your answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Dr. Slate, do you work with organizations?
Yes, we do. And those are excellent questions. I commend the caller for the insight that she obviously has regarding this important topic. I do work with organizations. As I think we've already discussed, I have worked with the U.S. Army Missile Research and Development Command. I've worked with the Parapsychology Foundation in New York and numerous private organizations. As a licensed psychologist, I have participated in a variety of professional continuing education courses that dealt with this topic. And so there have been many organizations with which I've worked in the past and still work with today. And we have investigated this topic of the human energy system for decades. Actually, the work goes back even to my graduate studies at the University of Alabama, where I did some research on the human energy system that included psychic vampirism and ways that can be counteracted or corrected. And then once I joined Athens State University, we continued those kinds of topics in our research. Anyway, as far as where we are at the moment, we have to admit we do not know all there is to know about this topic. But that could be said of many topics. We are still learning. And sometimes what we think we know turns out to be falsehood. So we have to be very careful in the claims that we make. And so I try to approach this topic with scientific objectivity. I know there is quite a bit of differences in opinions about this topic. It's sort of a highly charged topic among many people. Mm-hmm. So we try to approach it rationally with scientific objectivity. We used measuring devices. We developed electrophotography laboratory where we did measure the differences in the human energy system. And that research, as I've said, continued over decades. My conclusions in this book are actually based on a history of research that includes not only the nature of the human energy system, but the dynamics involved in it. And we've concluded we are essentially a human energy system. We call it the life force energy. Without it, we wouldn't exist. And it's a very dynamic system that is sensitive to a lot of influences, including the energy system of other human beings. And that's where psychic vampire became so critical in our research in the field of social psychology. I'm departing a little bit from your caller's concern here, but in the field of social psychology, we have a phenomenon called social distance, in which we adjust the distance between ourselves and another person so that we are in a comfortable spatial relationship. If that space is invaded, you can guess what we tend to do. We tend to back away from that other energy system that is more or less invading our private energy space. Actually, that's just a natural tendency, but another way we can cope with this invasion of other energy systems, generate a spatial distance between ourselves and that person. That's probably the simplest way of coping with psychic vampirism.
Right. That you pointed that out earlier, and it's all in this book, Psychic Vampires. And Dr. Slate, we're going to go to another call. You ready?
All right, I'm ready.
Okay, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Slate.
Oh, yes, thank you. I would love to hear you go back into the question that the other caller brought up. I think the concept of vampirism and what's happening in WBAI is a very interesting and very pertinent topic. So I'd be willing to give up my question if you were willing to go back to that subject.
Okay, I'll be happy to do that. Actually, I think what it comes down to, we have that private space, and we have an energy system that is very dynamic. It is receptive to energies around us, and it is reactive to any invasion of that energy, to include the draining of the energies. And so any invasion of that energy system can be extremely threatened. And so here's the thing. We have to find ways of, I mean, these things are going to happen. We have to find ways of coping with the invasion of that system, whether it's a procedure that has been adopted and recognized as essential, maybe for the safety of other people, or whether it might be a procedure that has some health risks. There's some concern now about the health risks of some safety systems that are in use today. But the point is, we can be active in protecting the energy system through the very techniques I discuss in my book. You can envelop yourself with a protective energy shield. And we've demonstrated that. There are pictures in the book of the electrophotographic aura system that investigated certain techniques that erect a protective shield around your personal energy system. Now, the strange thing is, it's very simple. It isn't complex. Once you know about it, you can easily use it. And you can use it almost anywhere, anytime. I could go into the details about how, some, and there are several of them. We earlier discussed the finger interlock technique.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very simple technique that you can use to erect a, we call it energy bubble, around your energy system that is cannot be penetrated, no matter what the threat around you is, whether it's some kind of a mechanical kind of threat or that of another energy system or whatever. It envelops you in a safety shield. And I think earlier studies for the Army, we felt that had powerful implications for a soldier, perhaps in a situation involving even psychic kinds of telepathic communications that can tap into highly classified, and there are such programs available and in use today. They can tap into sources of highly sensitive information. You can prevent that through some of the techniques that we discuss in this book. I'm not sure that I'm answering your question.
Well, you did kind of answer the question about how to protect yourself if you're in a snake pit of psychic vampires.
Right.
Then this is a good way to protect yourself, and it's very simple and very easy to do. And then you mentioned that if you're under some kind of electromagnetic attack, something like that, that might mm-hmm. affect your aura. You can. There are also methods. It's just as useful. So let's go to another call here. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Slate.
Yeah, it's Tom from the Bronx here. And I'd like to say, Dr. Slate, if you want to see a good movie of psychological value, believe it or not, it's Yogi Bear, the movie that's out. Now, wait a minute. I'm serious.
Yeah,
now. I'm
okay.
Not kidding. Mm-hmm. Yogi Bear... And the story, it's simplistic, it's written childlike for kids, but it showed the power of suggestion, like you mentioned something before, like from the individual that played the mayor of the town.
Yes.
That spoke to the underling of the ranger, and he says, you could be top ranger. All we have to do is get rid of, in other words, to get rid of the individual that knew everything and was there many years with experience. Individuals are very prone. It's a very simple formula. Well, the question I have is that, human beings, when they're in a frenzy, and you look at lemmings, like in Europe, that particular animal that they get together and they all jump off a cliff together.
Yeah.
Is that a mental situation where they're all in tune with each other? In other words, mentally, do they all of a sudden have a frequency that,
yeah.
that they go into each other's minds and they say, well, we have to move across a continent, but probably in primeval times that was all land and they would go to some other territory, but the mind always says, like, if they're jumping in the ocean.
Those are interesting questions and certainly astute observations. I think there, your question begs another question. Is there certain genetic programming involved in what seems to be energy transfer or energy exchange or blending of energies, however you wish to perceive that? And that certainly is a possibility. Another possibility could simply be a survival or self-destructive drive. It could work both ways. Interesting thing we found that often the simplest explanation is often the correct one. We tend to believe that the more complex the explanation is, the more valid whatever the information is. And we found the reverse of that to be true. Hmm. Complexity, I've mentioned this already, mm-hmm. seeks simplicity. Back to the observations that you describe, there are probably many possible explanations. You know, one main concept in psychology today is that a simple behavior can have many possible explanations, and they can interact with each other. And sometimes it's a little difficult to determine what they actually are. And as I said, we still don't know all there is to know about energies. We know they are transferable. We know they're experienced in group settings to include not only human beings, but animals as well, and can influence animal behaviors. And I think that's what we have going on in the situation you described.
Hmm. Well, Tom, thanks for that call, and we'll go to another one. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Slate.
Hello.
Hello.
In the interest of objectivity, this is the first time I have heard you, Jeff, and you, Dr. Slate. Jeff, I like you very much as an interlocutor and analyst and interviewer. And Dr. Slate, I find what you are saying quite fascinating. And as I was listening, I recall when taking a bus ride from my apartment to a school every day for about a 40-minute ride, I do a meditation. And I discovered for myself during the meditation that if I held my hands one upon the other in my lap, I told myself consciously, this is a way of retaining the energy that is being built up, you know, during the meditative process and, you know, things, you know, that I pondered during that process. And what you have said earlier about that individual going for the interview and interlocking her thumb.
Right.
It just struck such a striking parallel with what I had done.
Well, that's interesting. When you think about your hands as your body's antenna, then it makes sense that you could use your hands in ways that could preserve energies.
Absolutely.
By putting one hand on top of the other. That makes excellent sense to me.
Right.
Another possibility would be join the palms of your hands, and we researched that technique.
Oh!
Yes, by joining the palms of your hands,
right.
Either in a hand clasp. In fact, I have in my book The Hand Clasp of Power,
wow.
I believe we call the procedure. So it's very fascinating. We may have a little example of teleology going on here.
Of what?
Well, I call it synchronicity.
Teleology
is a better term.
Or synchronism, yes. Between
what? Synchronicity, in which certain universal truths tend to get around and eventually become accepted. But anyway, that's a great example of some of the things I discussed.
Absolutely.
In the book. You can actually use your hands as your body's antenna to connect to higher dimensions of power, you know, I get into techniques involving nature, just resting your hands upon a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people cast that aside as like tree hugging and forget it,
yeah.
But we found that simply resting your hands on the tree, and the tree is Earth's largest living thing and could be seen as Earth's antenna. With your antenna, your hands, resting on the tree,
uh-huh.
The Earth's antenna, you have the best possible contact to higher dimensions of power. Now, this gets into the metaphysical. But there are forces of energy, not only earthbound in this Earth dimension, but in other realms as well.
Okay. I have a question about how you measure energy. Now, how is that done in a laboratory setting?
We have a highly controlled laboratory in which we use various electrophotographic equipment, and this is done in our laboratory using, again, it's fascinating that it relates to what you just said. Our research usually centered on the fingertips. We would take photographs of energy on the fingertips, and we found the energy around your fingertip is like an energy signature. There's no other signature exactly like yours.
And those photos are in the books?
They are in the book.
Yes,
we also developed a advanced fingerprint technology that requires no ink, takes only seconds, and you get a very clear, almost perfect physical fingerprint. But what we were interested in is the energy fingertip enveloping the finger. And so the finger became actually the most reliable energy measure of the physical body. And we found the energy surrounding the fingertip is the best measure of the energy enveloping the full physical body.
Dr. Yeah. Slade, I just wanted to mention, we can either take a call or go on to conversation. But oh, go ahead, sir.
Yes, I'd like to say, Dr. Slade, great show, and this is a great show. I enjoyed your chem cell show, which sounds like there's real vampires that are trying to kill us. But one comment and one quick question.
All right.
America was based on sucking the blood of the African continent, both of the inhabitants and of the resources. Our whole economic system seems like there's vampires totally sucking the energy through taxes, through price controls. And I think you were referring to Kirlian photography,
yes,
where you measured the energy.
Exactly.
Right. One of the questions is, though, how did this whole system of the way we live, I mean, it seems that people are predatory. They're vampires, and could this even go back to our genetic origins of the lion sucking the blood of the zebra to live for meat or, you know, whatever in nature?
Yes, we observe it everywhere. Well, it's interesting to note that vampirism, energy, the energy type of vampirism, reaches all the way back to creation itself, although we don't usually label it as vampirism. When God created, if you look at biblical references, when God created man, he made man from dust, and then he breathed energy into man to give him the breath of life. Well, isn't that a form of transfer of energy, which could be seen as a form of vampirism, but of a positive kind? When he took an energy rib from the man to create woman, you have another transfer of energy, but in a manner that was positive, that is giving life to another human being. Well, as you move forward in time, like Delilah cutting the hair of Samson, to vampirize him and take away his energy, another form. It is a universal concept that reaches back to our very origins, and it continues in its various forms throughout today.
Dr. Slade,
yes.
We're running out of time.
Oh, okay.
I apologize to those callers on hold, but we have a lot of people that wanted to speak with you. It's not a surprise, but we have to wrap things up. And Psychic Vampires is the name of the book by Dr. Joe Slade. He's a licensed psychologist in private practice. Where can they find more information about you?
Oh, they can go to my publisher, Llewellyn Worldwide.
Okay.
They could do a Google on, you know, the internet and find all kinds of sources regarding my work and background and so forth. And I just wanted to say, Jeff, it is really an honor to be on your program. I'm impressed with the intelligence of your listeners, and the calls are really thought-provoking.
Absolutely.
And it's a real pleasure to be on your program.
Well, we're going to have you back again, and you're listening to In Other News, and thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Joe Slade. Have a wonderful holiday.
And you as well. It's a pleasure being on your program.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.